this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, bringing you non-corporate, non-violent empowerment commentary. I'm calling it commentary these days because I'm stuck driving a truck right now these days, in indentured servitude on a truck. And I used to record lectures and interview people about state-sponsored corporatism, but I can't do that anymore because I'm on a truck. So I end up listening to the news about 14 hours a day on various stations, mostly NPR, but also the conservative ones too. So I'm going to try and give you a sustainable design, truck driver, Proudhonian anarchist perspective on the news. And I'll try and keep it down to under an hour and try not to go off on tangents. In the future, I'm working on getting contact information so you can email me, but Google, I was trying to get away from Google, but I don't know if I can, so I may just do another Gmail account. I was trying to boycott Google, but it's difficult to do that because I need Google Maps for work. So what else? Oh yeah, I just want to thank A-Infos and support A-Infos and the other shows on there, especially Unwelcome Guests, New World Notes, and Global Research News Hour. You're doing some great stuff there. What else? All right, so there's four things that my information comes from. First of all, personal experience, and then my own research, and then stuff I get with three sources. I'm trying to find at least three sources that say the same thing, and also what I would hope would be true. Personally, I believe in that people deep down, if they're educated and empowered, they will make the correct decisions. So I hope that's right. If it's not, you can just kill me now. In the future, also, I'm going to try and excerpt some of the lectures that I recorded from corporate conference, things like conference to end corporate dominance. I have a lecture on squatting and also women and the Mideast peace process. So those are in the future, as well as some stuff from the WTO in 2002 in Cancun. I went down there and recorded some stuff. Today, though, I'm going to be tackling NPR. I'm sorry, NPR is Fox News, and the others are obviously propaganda. It's pretty easy to see, and I'll be tackling them in the future. But the NPR is especially nefarious because they're more subtle. You don't realize what is going on, what they're leaving out, and whether you believe in the election problems or not, I mean, they were reporting it literally every 15 minutes. They would have a report on the election, Russia and the election hacking. And I have so much other stuff to worry about. Plus, they're publicly funded. And, you know, there's no such thing as non-biased news. So that's what I'm going to be tackling today on Talk is Cheap. Stay tuned.
Begin message text. Good morning. The Vatican Modesto terminals on average are 6 times higher than both Line JLOD and Love Ness Refinish. In Central California, the Fresno terminal is about 5 cents higher than the pricing at the Love Ness 2 or going up the 99, and the Fresno terminal is 5 cents more than the pricing at the Pilot Los Hills going up the 5. Please fuel at appropriate locations and message text.
Alright, this is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susty. Driving truck here. I just picked up some cardboard at Harry and David in Medford. So headed back to Springfield, Oregon to have this cardboard recycled. NPR, I'm sorry to pick on NPR. And in their defense, Ira Glass, Terry Gross, David Brancaccio, they do great work. NPR has a lot of corporate sponsors. Alfred P. Sloan Foundation was General Motors in the during World War II. And what do you think the Walton Foundation is? Plus the Koch, I think it's the Koch brothers is a sponsor. Plus they keep using people like Council on Foreign Relations, which is the trilateralist. They are a corporate think tank. And what do you think the American Enterprise Institute is? What do you suppose that is? I listened to him over the weekend too while I'm trying to sleep. What they do is what's called, now some of this might sound minor, just using it as an example of things to watch out for. What they did over the weekend is called what's called, what Ira Glass did on his story on immigration and whether immigrants cause lower wages for Americans. He did what's called burying the lead. They also do what's called taking out the trash. For instance, taking out the trash on over the weekend, they'll report stuff that they don't report during the week. And I know this may sound subtle, but trivial, but for instance, they were reporting this thing on Jerusalem where we're making the Jerusalem the capital of Israel. And then they said, you know, maybe Trump's going to make this a bargaining chip. They said that during the week. On the weekend, though, they said it a little different. A guy in England said they could say that Israel has now gotten something, and what is Israel willing to give up now that they have been given something? Okay, so that's the difference between saying, it's slightly different than saying, hey, we can use this as a bargaining chip. They're actually saying what the bargaining chip would consist of. So to me, that's a subtle difference, and now I don't hear any of that at all as from this week. That was from last weekend. And then this show On the Media is supposed to be a media analysis show, and they do the best they can on that show too, but they are lacking heavily if they're calling themselves any kind of ombudsman. What they did was, they did a story on these, and I'm purposely not doing this story, but I'll just touch on it. The bullying that's going on, let's call it the men's issue that's been going on that I'm trying to stay away from. They were talking about bullying, and I mentioned bullying in my last show. What they missed was, and they said that there's a psychological reason, and they touched on that bullies are insecure and all that. But what they missed was there's a direct correlation between the increase in corporatism and people becoming a cog in a machine, and the need to bully, and the response to working a dead-end job. And even these are powerful people really don't have any power, so they seek power where they can get it, because our society, it never has really given people power, empowered people, but it especially, now it's on the decline. individual power, and you can't, no one's life has value, and you can't make an, you have no effect on society. So this is the increase in bullying, and on the media just kind of glossed over that, where they're trying to make an analysis of it. They kind of left that out, and that's fairly accepted position in psychology. Not a big one for psychiatry. There might be a problem with psychiatry, but psychology, basic psychology, is fairly accurate. Not all of psychology. All right, so getting to Ira Glass. Ira Glass used to do human interest stories, and now they had a successful story where they broke some news. I think it was about the Supreme Court. And sorry, I'm shifting gears over the hill here. There's the horn. Ira Glass used to do human interest stories. Now he does political stuff. And like I say, in his defense, I don't think they let him do anything anti-corporate on there because of their corporate overlords. So what he did was he did this two-part story, and if he's gonna correct himself in the second part of the story, that's really kind of irresponsible to do that, to make assertions like he did, and then correct himself in the second half of the story. So what he did is called burying the lead. What he said, what the story said was, they go on about, they're in Alabama, talking about a meatpacking plant that has been taken over by Hispanic workers, or Latino, whatever term you want to use. Anyway, and why he doesn't, there's several people that have done the meatpacking industry, and they don't mention Upton Sinclair. There must be a reason why they don't mention a very famous book from the 1900s by Upton Sinclair about the meatpacking industry, where he describes how among the health risks of the meatpacking industry, he also describes how they take ethnic groups. They're notorious for pitting ethnic groups against one another. You have a group of people, they will pit them against the other one to get them to work harder. And what happened in this book is they pitted groups against each other until they were literally, they're cutting their hands off to try to work faster than the other group. I mean, they pitted Irish against against Russians, and Lithuanians against Romanians, and Morlocks against Oompa Loompas, and Klingons against Romulans. And if you've got an ethnic group, I hope you can't hear me grinding gears there. If you've got an ethnic group, the meatpacking industry will pit you against one another. All right, so now I'm going downhill. I gotta make sure my brakes don't go out, so I got my engine brake on. All right, so why he doesn't mention the jungle is beyond me. And then he doesn't talk about the maquiladora system in Mexico, which has been, if you want a primer on the maquiladora system, you might wanna watch Zorro with Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones and Hannibal Lecter. To see what that's fairly, it's a fiction, again, fiction, but you can see what the maquiladora system in Mexico did. And, so then he goes on and he says, well, then there was the advent of the chicken McNugget. Drastically expanded the chicken manufacturing and meat cutting industry, and then he glosses over that. But see, that's an important part of the story. Walmart and McDonald's, multinational corporations, dictate to the farmers what they will produce and how much they will produce and at what price they will produce it at. So in my day, back when I was a lad, for instance, my mother would buy, we had this grocery store that she could have them hang a side of beef in there for her and then take cuts off of it all the time. We had butchers. There was actually a butcher shop before my time. We had butcher shops. When I was a kid, the meat man, we had the meat man, And he would go to the meat market and buy meat. And there were different grades of meat. And so the farmer had a market that you would go to and pick out their meat, whatever they grew for that year, rather than dictating to the farmer what he will do to grow chickens, and in other words, make it to where he has to basically do factory farming in order to get his price down cheap enough, because he's competing with other factory farms. And this is in Food Inc. If you ever watch Food Inc., you'll hear about this. So they just gloss over that, and that's fine. But then what he does is he says, oh, and by the way, the Mexican economy collapsed. Well, that's an important thing, because the problem is not immigration. The problem is our foreign economic policy. Our domestic and economic policy, domestic and foreign economic policy, is the problem. So that's why it's called burying the lead. That is the story. And like I say, maybe he's going to make up for that. But for instance, the Mexican economy, like I say, they still have the maquiladoro system down there. And they don't pay their workers a living wage. And so that's why they come up here. And then we don't pay our workers a living wage, because the corporations have done this for years. They pit groups against one another to get the wages down instead of coming up with a better product and a better service to compete with one another. And let's face it, what happens is eventually we only have one place that we can buy from, and there is no competition, and it is socialism for multinational corporations. It is not capitalism in any way. So let me get into this a little bit and try to explain this in a simple way. I mean, I got a zany, wacky idea. How about you in Mexico pay your workers a living wage, you grow your own food, produce your own goods, produce your own sex toys. Apparently sex toys are important. If you've ever worked for Amazon, it's critical to have a good supply of sex toys. I'm using that example for a reason. And then we'll do that stuff here in America, and we won't have to transfer stuff back and forth anymore. And then we'll transfer culture. You send your ballet up here and your sports teams, and we'll play against your sports teams and your ballet and your musicians, and we'll transfer culture back and forth. But we'll all be self-sufficient, and we won't have to go through a broker and let the broker, who's basically a pimp without the purple hat, make all the money between us transferring goods back and forth to our countries, between our countries, and labor. So you say, DJ Susty, but the French make a superior sex toy called the French Tickler, and it's important to me that I have a French Tickler. Well, so if they have a superior product, then yes, you go and buy that superior product and pay the shipping costs. Maybe someday we'll have solar-powered ships, but right now you're going to have to pay for the fuel. Without a subsidized fuel system, you will have to pay for a superior product like Swiss watches. They make a better product. And then, hey, okay, so now, Mr. Sustainable Truck Driver Man, the patent on the French Tickler has gone out, and now China and Mexico can produce their own French Ticklers at a cheaper price. Can't I go down and buy stuff in Mexico and buy my French Tickler from China? Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that's the whole point. The reason, think about this, why do you think it's cheaper to buy stuff in Mexico and buy stuff in China? It's because they pay their labor less money. And, though, this is an important and, we destabilize their currency. It is true that the value of the peso and the value of the Chinese yuan and whatever else, the renminbi or whatever the hell they call it over there in China, yes, those are devalued because of the petrodollar. They're set up against the petrodollar. And another thing is there's a direct correlation between how corrupt your government is and how much your currency is worth. And this goes for America too. You notice when we go to, when we have unnecessary wars that when we go to the war with the wrong country unnecessarily, our currency tends to go down, because businesses as well as people, they're looking for stability. You want stability, because you don't want it, the bitch butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, he doesn't want to produce stuff if someone's going to come along and take it away from him. It doesn't do any good, so he wants stability. And you'll notice, like I say, that our currency goes up and down depending on our happiness quotient. However, we are the base currency for the world, so it doesn't quite affect us the same as other people. I'll give you another example. Thailand used to have the Thai baht used to be the most stable currency in the world for years. And the reason is because even though they had a lot of problems in Thailand, and you'd see sweatshop, there is some sweatshop stuff from Thailand, they had a fairly uncorrupt government there for a period, and so the Thai baht was stable for years. The Forex markets used to use the Thai baht as a baseline for Forex prices, for foreign exchange prices of currency. So, and then what happened one day is foreign direct investment, the IMF turned Thailand into an export economy. The entire economy collapsed and brought down the entire Asian market with it. You can look this up. Foreign direct investment and the World Bank, they tied their exports to loans that they made to them. The export market went downhill. They couldn't repay their loans. And next thing they know, the economy's down. In fact, and then what happened was they found the ruler of Thailand in an airport with suitcases full of money where he had looted the treasury of Thailand. So this is, and since then, the Thai baht is no longer the base currency, the most stable currency in the world. So the point I'm making is, there wouldn't be a discrepancy, you wouldn't be able to buy stuff cheaper in other countries if we, the United States corporations and the United States multinational banks, didn't destabilize the currency with, it's not just the Federal Reserve either, it's the petrodollar, and that zany CIA going in there and with their economic hitmen and destabilizing these countries and installing dictators. And also trying to maintain a cheap source of oil instead of just being self-sufficient. So, that's my rant on NPR and Ira Glass's story on immigration. It is our foreign economic policy that is the problem, not immigration. In fact, they were, when our economy went down, it actually went over, the people started going over the border the other direction. And one other thing, I have personal experience in this. In the 80s, a friend of mine that I was working with, Javier, wanted to go to Tijuana. So we went down there, and back then you could go across the border with like it was nothing. You go down there and come right back. In fact, what shocked me was there was a lady down there begging for money, stark naked. So, so there's always been a problem in Mexico. There's always been major poverty in there and corruption down in Mexico, mostly caused by American corporations and the international banking concerns. But then, you could get back over the border almost instantly. Then in 2015, I went down there to get some dental work done because I can't afford dental insurance on my indentured servitude slave labor job. So I went down there to get some dental work done, and partly to support their economy too, not just being cheap, but And it took, and this was 2015, took 3 hours to get back over the border. A huge line of people. You could bribe somebody to get over the border and get over a little faster, but really you couldn't get over the border any faster. So, and then I just went there recently, and the border is, it's about a half hour to get across the border. So all, like I say, all has nothing to do with Humpty Dumpty and his, or Trumpty Dumpty and his wall. And we all know what happened to Humpty Dumpty and his wall. It's not going to do any good to make a wall until you change your foreign economic policy. All right, so when I come back, I'm going to try and give you some solutions. Well, let me get into it right now. Amazon, first of all, net neutrality, they're voting on that. Look up Cuban internet. What they do in Cuba, this is where we may have to go, is they have, someone will have internet, and they will load a bunch of stuff, movies and stuff, on a DVR and a hard drive, and they go around to everybody's house and upload that stuff onto their computer. And there's also there's a way to have a network on cell phones. So I'm just trying to, the reason I call it Talk is Cheap is because I try to give people stuff that they can do personally, although now that I'm on a truck, it's difficult for me to do things. So Amazon, please stop buying from Amazon. You cannot tell me from a sustainable standpoint that it is sustainable to run your entire economy, or I mean, to deliver stuff with a truck. I'm driving a truck, okay? It's much cheaper to take trucks between centers and then you go get the stuff, preferably with using mass transportation, you go get it from a central location, than it is to deliver the stuff to your door. That cannot possibly be sustainable, let alone take it, bring it over from China. Plus, I have two perspectives on personal perspectives on Amazon. As a truck driver, I can tell you that they use the cheapest truck drivers they possibly can. They use Swift. My sister worked for Amazon too, and she and so did I for about 9 months. And she was, they finally promoted her to a dock person, and they use Swift, they use the cheapest truck drivers they possibly can. They made us load the trucks, and you have this conveyor belt that's literally like a Lucy episode, where the candy is going down the conveyor belt. They have this conveyor belt that you cannot possibly keep up with, because you're working for a robot, the mechanical sensei. You're actually working for a robot, you're working for a machine. And and you have to keep these totally unreasonable quotas, and they don't even maintain the equipment for you to maintain these quotas. So it's literally, it nearly killed me. I was in my 50s, I admit, but working there, not as a retiree, they give the retirees a little slower jobs, but. Amazon is not sustainable. It is not. It is a sweatshop. It is an American sweatshop. So there's one major thing you can do is stop buying from Amazon. There is plenty of places you might have to pay a little more for something. And if you can't afford it, I guess go ahead and if that's all you can do is buy from Amazon, then maybe you'll have to. I personally have managed not to buy stuff from Amazon, even though I have a few online purchases. My sister was telling me she loves Amazon, and I'm trying to get her to stop with that. She said, I need a heater in my house. She says, well, buy one on Amazon, have it shipped to you, and then have someone install it for you. Well, think about it. This guy, anytime you have a mechanic who work on your car, he's making a little bit of profit on the parts. So the same with a heater installer. He makes profit on the unit itself. He buys it wholesale and sells it to you and installs it. So he, not only is he losing the money, he's going to charge you more money when he installs it because he's not making the money off of the unit itself. So again, stop buying from Amazon and take your trash to Walmart and dump your trash at Walmart in the receptacle, not on the We have enough plastic floating around the ocean. Don't just throw it on the street. All right, what else? I'm working from an outline here because I'm driving. All right, this is Talk is Cheap. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
We're going to play one more song. I think you'll recognize it from this party. It's called Something About the Spaceman Starship Trooper.